Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
J.D. Holliday, and this is Halo Kids Tales, and Halo Kids Tales can be listened to live at blogtalkradio.com/rrradio at showtime right now, or you can listen to it on demand at any time you like at the same address at rrradio@blogtalkradio. Welcome to It's Storytime. Halo Kids Tales, confusing. Our two stories today are No Ordinary Yarmulke by Dawn Walensky and Because I'm Elizabeth by Jacqueline McDonald. Our first story is No Ordinary Yarmulke by Dawn Walensky. Hi, Dawn. Thank you for being here.
Hi, J.D. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, I'm so glad you could make it. Tell us about No Ordinary Yarmulke.
Well, the book follows Holden's incredible journey through Jewish history, which begins when he tries on the first of seven yarmulkes at Yentl's Judaic Treasures. It is these adventures that provide him with the confidence to stand up in front of friends and family at his bar mitzvah, which is just 7 days away.
Go ahead, Dawn. Read the story.
So, No Ordinary Yarmulke by Dawn Walensky. Illustrations by Tirza Peleg. 7 days. Just the thought of it made my stomach feel like dreidels were spinning around like they did during the 8 nights of Hanukkah. The only thing worse is my reoccurring nightmare of standing in front of my family and friends at the Bima. Of course, in the dream, I wore nothing but my underwear and yarmulke. Yarmulke, that reminds me. Today, Mom planned to take me to buy a special one for my bar mitzvah. Just 7 more days until one of the most important days of my life. Calm down, I whispered at the mirror in my room. You'll do fine. You've mastered the Torah, you can chant most of the Haftarah, and you've nailed the Parsha. A little nagging voice laughed at the back of my mind. Yeah, right. Just wait until your bar mitzvah. You'll be standing in front of everyone and poof, all those words will be gone. My subconscious seems to be feeling feisty today. Holden, are you awake? Mom called up the stairs. I sighed at my reflections. Yeah, I yelled back. I'll be down in a few minutes. The scent of fresh waffles made my mouth water, so I rushed down the stairs to find my mom looking through the yellow pages. She glanced up and frowned in concern. You look a little pale. Are you all right? I'm fine, Mom. Just got a lot of things on my mind. Is it your bar mitzvah? It's perfectly normal to be a little nervous. It only happens once, and your nervousness means that you're taking it seriously. She looked down at the phone book. Hey, Yentl's Judaic Treasures looks like an interesting store. I'm sure we can find a special yarmulke there. After we shoveled our waffles down the hatch, we headed to find the perfect yarmulke. Mom pulled in front of the store. I stared out the window at the dilapidated sign hanging above the door. Faded cursive writing spelled Yentl's Judaic Treasures. What a dump, I thought as we left the car. Hope Mom doesn't make us stay here too long. As I reached for the knob, the sun's rays reflected off the chrome doorframe and shone a warm light on my face. That warm feeling stayed with me as I surveyed the tattered facade, desperately in need of repair. Many of its weather-stained bricks seemed older than the dirt used to make them. Mom, are you sure this is the right place? Come on, Mom smiled. It's an adventure. Just think of the name. We may find our very own special treasure today. If you say so, I eyed the cracked second-floor window, sighed, and pushed open the door. Yentl, an older, heavy-set woman with silver streaks in her blonde hair, welcomed us with a creaky voice. Do you need help? Help, I thought. Yes, desperately. In 7 days, would you stand up in front of my friends and family and recite the Torah and Haftarah for me? Yes, my mom replied. We're looking for a special yarmulke for my son Holden to wear his to his bar mitzvah next week. How lovely, she said. Such a handsome boy. She took a limping step closer. My eyes widened as her red, dagger-like fingers lifted in the air and drifted towards my cheek. Oh, no! She was going to pinch it. I leaned away, but Mom elbowed me. Wasn't she asking if we needed help? I'm looking for help now. Can't someone help me? All of my silent begging was futile. A gentle squeeze and fire burst through my cheek. She stared deeply into my eyes. Are you prepared for the big day? Well, I... Don't worry, she interrupted. I'm sure you'll do fine. Now let's see about that yarmulke. She led us through a maze of beautifully lit tallits, shiny silver menorahs, and fancy candlesticks, and an array of religious books. Eventually, we reached the large yarmulke section at the back of the store. I reached for one on a nearby table, but Yentl smacked my hand away. Instead, she reached for a box on the top shelf. Now, you said special. Those are just your ordinary head coverings. In this box, I have some really magical ones that will guide you well. Yentl laid down seven yarmulkes side by side across the table. I grabbed for the middle one, and she smacked my hand again. Not yet. I'll tell you which one to try and when. Now, you've got to be kidding. I have to finish my math homework, practice my three-point shot, and squeeze in a little video game time. I don't have time to mess around. Just then, my dream came back to me. I pictured myself standing in front of the congregation wearing only my underwear and yarmulke. If that's all I'm going to be wearing next week, I better make sure I get one heck of a good yarmulke. Here, Yentl said, I think you'll like this one. These beautifully embroidered pictures depict the story of Noah's Ark. Go ahead, dear. Try it on, my mom urged. As Yentl gently placed it on my head, a funny sensation ran through my body. My vision blurred, and the room seemed to spin. I fell, nearly missing a big pile of mud. At least, I hoped it was mud. The smell indicated otherwise. My nose filled with a pungent odor. No, that's not quite right. A rather horrid, pungent odor assaulted my nostrils. What is that stink? I tried in vain to fan the smell from my nose. It smells like my gym socks after playing basketball. I looked around for a way to get back home, but something caught my eye. I froze. In the land around me, hundreds of animals walked, jumped, and leaped. All of them headed towards a large wooden vessel. Some animals walked in pairs of two, while others walked in sets of seven. Those had to be the kosher animals that would be offered as a sacrifice. Could this be real? No, I must be dreaming. But my dreams don't usually have smell-o-vision. And I'd never dreamt of Noah's Ark before. I thought back to everything I knew about Noah's Ark. The flood had been God's attempt to cleanse the world of all living things except for one righteous man, Noah, and his family. He built an ark per God's precise instructions, collected some of each species, brought lots of food, and hightailed it out of there before an enormous flood hit. It had lasted for 40 days and 40 nights. My Hebrew teacher, Rabbi Eisenberg, had once posed this question. Although everyone around him followed the evil in their hearts, Noah followed God. Do you set an example with your life, or are you negatively influenced by the people around you? Wow, that's a heavy question. But before I had time to consider an answer, I found myself faced with a choice. A baby ram was about to be trampled by an elephant's giant foot. Should I rush forward and rescue it, or stay safely hidden in the landscape? The choice was easy. I rushed towards the animal and scooped it away from harm. The elephant trumpeted and reared up. I backpedaled and tripped. As I fell, my yarmulke sailed away. An instant later, I stood with my mom and Yentl again. So what did you think of that yarmulke? Yentl asked. A curious sparkle glinted in her eye. I guess it was all right, I stammered. Just all right, she questioned. Then it wasn't perfect. We need to find the one that truly suits you. I leaned away as she approached with the second yarmulke, but my curiosity was piqued. As she laid it upon my head, a shiver ran up my spine. The next thing I knew, I slipped and fell down a sand dune. I got to my feet and spotted a bunch of cool-looking pyramids in the distance and decided to check them out. Oh, this is going to be good, I laughed to myself. I trudged through hot sand for what seemed like forever and was about to call it quits when a young man, dressed in a loose robe, nearly bumped into me. Hurry, 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 you'll be late for the speech, he rushed onward. Wait, I stumbled after him, already tired from my walk. What speech? Silly boy, he said. The village is gathering to hear a speech from the Egyptian prince. Come on, follow me. Hey, what's your name? I called after him, but he didn't bother to reply as we made our way through the crowds. I didn't blame him. The crowds were pretty loud. I settled against the sandstone building while the prince, much older than I'd expected, spoke to the crowd. His words were labored, yet held an inner power. He told how the Israelites could gain freedom from the oppressive forces of the Egyptian rulers. I, along with the crowd, sensed the greatness of this man. He is slow of speech, but full of knowledge and a true servant of God. My God nudged my side. He also fled to Medea because he killed an Egyptian who was mistreating a Hebrew. I nodded to him. This must be Hebrew. Moses, I thought to myself. The old man continued to speak. He wanted to take the Israelites out of Egypt and bring them to the promised land. I wanted to hear more, but a gust of wind blew off my yarmulke. As I reached for it, my vision spun again. Before I knew it, I stood back at the store. Hi, I tried to act as if nothing weird was happening. Mom would take me to the psych ward if she knew I was having visions. What's going on with you today? You seem a million miles away. You don't know the half of it, I thought. It's just bar mitzvah jitters, I said. I'm sure when it's all over, I'll be back to myself again. Yentl smiled. So, bar mitzvah boy, how did that one suit you? It was quite interesting, I said with a half smirk. Good boy, she said. Let's see what you think of this one. She reached for the third yarmulke and carefully placed it on my head. The next thing I knew, people jostled into me as I stood in the crowded street. As I looked around, I saw a hook-nosed man striding through the streets. He wore a weird triangle-shaped hat, and people bowed to him like he was some sort of king. One old man caught my eye. He straightened his white long beard, arched his shoulders back, and sat by himself at the king's gate. The old man clearly did not plan on bowing down to this man. Okay, I thought. Last time I saw Moses, this is probably another story I should know. Then I remembered the story of Purim, the ugly noble would be Haman the Evil, who became angry when the old man Mordecai refused to bow down to him. Haman and his wife Zeresh devised a plot to not only kill Mordecai, but all the Jews of Persia. Thanks to some intervention from Queen Esther, the king's wife, and Mordecai's niece, it was Haman who was hung in Mordecai's place. I remember seeing a picture of Haman the Evil and wanted to get a better look at him to see if my hunch was right. As I inched closer, I tripped over a little boy crouched on the ground. My yarmulke sailed towards the ground. Are you all right? You look a little flustered, my mom said. Yes, but I was anything but okay. But I wasn't ready to tell him my story yet. I glanced at the remaining four yarmulkes. I wondered what other lessons hid under those caps. Yentl's ruby-red lips parted to reveal a Cheshire Cat grin. Choosing a yarmulke can be quite an adventure. I guess so, I said. You guess so, she snorted. Oy vey, maybe this one will suit you. Yentl reached for the fourth yarmulke and placed it on my head. Once again, I was transported back in time and landed in what looked like a cave. I blinked, trying to adjust to the dim light. Slowly, I saw groups of people huddled together nearby. I stood quietly for a few minutes and realized that most seemed to be studying the Torah, while others whispered about plotting against the Syrian Greeks. The evil mongrels won't let us praise God in our own way. How do our beliefs hurt them? Suddenly, loud, boisterous voices erupted just outside the cave. Someone yelled, "The Greeks are coming! Hide your scrolls and get out your tops! They cannot find us studying the Torah." Everyone reached into their pockets and took out dreidels. Jews of all ages began spinning their tops. Greek soldiers entered the cavern, but seeing only the games, they all seemed satisfied that no Torah learning was going on in here. All of them, that was, except for one burly Greek soldier. He narrowed his eyes at me. There must be more going on than just spinning tops. I panicked. From my lessons, I knew that studying Torah was outlawed by Greek King Antiochus IV. The punishment would be swift and brutal. Death. No, I steadied my voice. There are many, many hours in the day. When we are not laboring, we pass the time by playing games and gambling. The burly soldier studied me for one heart-stopping moment, and I wondered whether he believed me. With only a grunt of acknowledgement, he turned on his heel and left. When the soldiers were safely away, everyone let out a collective sigh. One of the elders patted my shoulder. That was close. We might be forbidden to study Torah, but our faith remained strong. Well done, young one. Syrian Greeks, Jews studying in secret? Wait a minute, I realized. These people must be the Maccabees who fought against and defeated the Syrian Greeks. Rabbi Eisenberg had spent several lessons teaching us that the Jews eventually regained control of the temple in Jerusalem. Wanting to purify it, they burned the only vial of sacred oil they had, believing it would burn for one night. Instead, it lasted for 8 days. This eventually would be celebrated as the miracle of Hanukkah, and it explained why we light the menorah for 8 days. As I looked around, many sets of probing eyes focused on me, the young boy who had stood up to a Syrian soldier. Not knowing how to explain my presence, I reached for my yarmulke and again landed back at Yentl's house of weird happenings. Holden? Mom's voice shook me back to reality. Have you made a decision yet? I stammered. Don't rush the boy, Yentl interjected. There is much to be learned by being patient. We must choose a yarmulke that truly suits him. Let's try this one next. I snatched the fifth yarmulke from her hand and placed it on my head. Instead of that strange tingling feeling, my heart was filled with an unexpected sadness. I stared at the rusty bars of a makeshift prison cell. I had learned much about the horrors of the Holocaust, both at middle school and Hebrew school. Nearly 6 million Jews had been killed. Even my own grandparents were imprisoned in a concentration camp under Hitler's terrible reign. Luckily, they escaped and made a good life for themselves in America. The air was filled with sadness and despair. For a moment, I didn't notice the pair of sad brown eyes staring at me. A young boy about my age sat on the filthy floor. His clothes were ripped, his face was pale, and he wasn't wearing any shoes. Where did you come from? He asked as he stood and approached the bars that separated us. Are you a Jew? I didn't know what to say. He seemed to sense that. He studied me for what seemed like eternity and rubbed his eyes as if to wipe away this hallucination he must be having. I'm not sure if you're real, but in case you are, please don't pity me. I have suffered much, but I am still proud to be a Jew. Don't let what we have suffered here go unnoticed. Keep it in your mind and especially in your heart. Share it with those around you so that no one ever forgets. Those words were like a dagger to my soul. I nodded numbly, but didn't want to spend one more moment there than I had to. I reached up and removed my yarmulke. I had never been so happy to see my mom's face than at that very moment. She again asked questions, and I didn't know how to respond. Shaken by the sadness in my last journey, I was about to call it quits. Yentl, what's going on? I demanded. Yentl shrugged. Life is not so simple. Everyone needs to experience both the good and bad as they journey toward their bar mitzvah. Mom nodded in agreement, yet she had clearly had enough. Are you ready to make a decision? Here was my out. I had experienced enough. I could grab my mom and leave Yentl and her crazy collection of yarmulkes behind. On the other hand, there were only 2 yarmulkes left. What did I have to lose? I glanced at the 6th one, its perimeter covered by beautiful images. Mom watched me, waiting for an answer. There were just 2 more, Mom, I said. Let's try those, and then I can decide. Yentl reached for the 6th yarmulke and held it gingerly in her pudgy, wrinkled hands. She explained that the images depicted Israel and its many sacred places. Of particular note was the Western Wall in Jerusalem, one of the holiest of holy places in all of Israel. It used to be called the Wailing Wall, I remembered. Jews would write a prayer or wish on a small piece of paper called a kfiddle. Afterward, they would insert into a crack in the holy wall in hopes that God would answer their prayer. Since all prayers are sent to heaven through Jerusalem, this was like having a continual prayer linked to the big man himself. Without a word, Yentl placed the yarmulke on my head. Here I go again, I mused. This time, I found myself sandwiched in the middle of a huge crowd. Although the crowd gathered against the wall, there seemed to be enough room for everyone to squeeze their wish into a vacant crack. I gaped at this magnificent wall, littered with tiny pieces of people's souls, their innermost thoughts and wishes sticking out of the holy stones where one of the last remaining portions of the ancient temple of Solomon once stood. I couldn't help but wonder if God actually did hear their prayer, but then again, it was worth a try. Instinctively, I reached inside my pocket and found a small piece of paper and a pencil. No doubt, this was the work of Yentl. How did she do all this? That was a question that I probably would never figure out. I quickly scribbled a note asking for God's help to guide me through the next 7 days. This would help me make my mom and dad proud at my bar mitzvah. I stood on my tippy toes and stretched my arms as far as I could as I tried to find a vacant crack to place my wish. Luckily, I found a tiny crevice just large enough to stuff in my prayer. As I backed away from the wall, I lost my footing and my yarmulke slipped off. I found myself whirling, twirling, and landing in a place that felt like home. Instead of Yentl's strange shop, I stood at the beam of my synagogue, the eyes of my friends and family focused squarely on me. No longer did I feel those dreidels spinning in my stomach. My journey through the 6 yarmulkes, real or imagined, I'm still not sure, brought me inner peace, but I couldn't help but wonder what happened to the seventh one. The first six had helped me gain a greater understanding of what the Jews before me had sacrificed in order to bring me to this momentous occasion. The words I read from the Torah held greater depth than they had ever done before. My chanting of the Haftorah not only resounded in the synagogue, but in my heart. I was now a young and proud Jewish man. I glanced into the crowd to see my parents beaming with pride, both holding tissues to wipe away happy tears. Even my younger sister Aurora looked at me proudly. I stepped off the bima and couldn't resist reaching up to take off my yarmulke. To my delight, it was the last in the set of seven, a kaleidoscope of all the places I had visited. The word L'chaim was scripted across the center, engraved in beautiful gold lettering. Yes, I thought, L'chaim, to life, the end.
Very nice story and wonderful history lesson.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, Dawn, where can people buy your book?
Well, they can get it on Amazon.com, and they can also purchase it at No Ordinary Yarmulke, spelled as it said, .weebly.com.
Okay. And do you have any other books?
No. You know what, JD? This is my first book, but hopefully not my last. I'm currently working on a couple of others, and since Holden has a sister, Aurora, you never know, she can have some magical adventures when she heads towards her bat mitzvah.
Ah, good idea. Now, where can people find you and your books online?
Well, I've created a website at noordinaryyarmulke.weebly.com, and I've put some images, some information on myself, on the book there as well. And there's also a link to purchase the book on there as well.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you, Dawn, for being here and reading No Ordinary Yarmulke to us.
It was my pleasure, JD. Thank you so very much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
And thank you for being here, Dawn. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Our second story is Because I'm Elizabeth by Jacqueline McDonald. Hi, Jacqueline. How are you?
Hello, JD. I'm very well, thank you. And how are you?
I'm good, good. Why don't you go ahead and tell us about Because I'm Elizabeth?
Okay, thank you. Because I'm Elizabeth is one of over 75 books in a series of books called by Name Books. Each book is personalized with the child's photo, and each story connects the child to his or her Judeo-Christian namesake. As JD said, the book that I'm going to read for you today is Because I'm Elizabeth. Again, my name is Jacqueline McDonald. Shall I begin?
Go right ahead.
Thank you. Elizabeth likes peaches. She likes their slightly fuzzy skin. She likes their juicy juices dripping down her chin. She likes to plant peach pits in her backyard where the sun shines brightly and the dirt is hard. I must have planted a million pits, Elizabeth says to her mommy, then adds this. Surely someday one will grow into a tree filled with peaches for you and me. Later that night, Elizabeth sneaks a peach. Mommy says, Elizabeth, it's too late to eat. Elizabeth answers, sorry, Mommy, but all that's left is the pit. May I go outside to plant it? It's too late, Elizabeth, her mommy replies. Put the pit in a bag and put the bag in a refrigerator. You can plant it tomorrow, no sooner or later. The next day, Elizabeth and her mommy forget about the peach pit in the fridge. They go food shopping at the grocery store up on the ridge. Back home, Elizabeth must help Mommy put the groceries away before she can go out to play. Elizabeth pushes the milk way back, way to the back, leaving no room for the little brown sack. Elizabeth doesn't see the brown paper sack fall all the way down the back of the refrigerator wall. Several weeks later, Mommy finds the sack on the bottom of the fridge, way in the back. Looking into the sack, Mommy says, Elizabeth, I'm afraid this peach pit is dried up and dead. That's okay, Mommy. I have a good feeling about this. I know just where to plant this shriveled up pit. Behind the shed, Elizabeth plants the cold, dry pit. Then she prays out loud like this. Please, God, make this peach pit grow into a tree filled with peaches for Mommy and me. On a warm Sunday morning in the second week of spring, Elizabeth has good news to bring. Mommy, Elizabeth shouts, the peach pit has grown into a sprout. Hearing her, Elizabeth's mommy runs outside, and when she sees the sprout, her smile grows wide. Mommy says, let's go search the internet for people who know how to make sure this sprout will grow. Back in the house, Mommy touches the computer keys while Elizabeth watches on bended knees. Then Mommy reads these words aloud, and hearing them makes Elizabeth proud. She says, to grow a peach tree from a pit, you must do this before you plant it. Place the pit in a brown paper bag and close the bag up tight. Keep it cold and dry and away from sunlight. Let the peach pit sleep for several weeks. Then Elizabeth's mommy says, even though we didn't know, we did just the right thing for the peach pit to grow. Elizabeth says, Mommy, we didn't have to know, because God knows how to make things grow. And someday, my little sprout will grow into a tree full of peaches for you and me. Mommy asks, have you no doubt, not even a little bit? Elizabeth replies, no, Mommy, no doubt, because I'm Elizabeth. Meanwhile, in a different space and time, Elizabeth of long ago flashes the thumbs up sign. And here is her story. Elizabeth and her husband Zachariah were good and kind. They were old and had been married for a very long time. Elizabeth prayed for a baby every day, but Elizabeth had never been in a baby way. One night, an angel spoke to Zachariah in a dream.
90.
Things are not what they seem. It may take a while, but Elizabeth will have a child. Zachariah did not believe his dream could come true, but Elizabeth believed. Elizabeth knew. Finally, Elizabeth had a newborn. Zachariah said, but it took so long. Aren't we too old to raise a child? I'm afraid I just don't know. Elizabeth answered, Zachariah, we don't have to know, because God knows how to make a child grow. Zachariah says, Elizabeth, have you no doubt, not even a little bit? Elizabeth says, no, Zachariah, no doubt, because I'm Elizabeth. Elizabeth, this book is dedicated to you, and your name means God's promise. The end.
Wow, that's a nice story, too.